Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
The Adventure Jogger, a podcast about trail and ultra running. Meet fascinating runners from the front, middle, and back of the pack, sharing inspiring and funny stories about life and running. Running should be fun, and so should running podcasts. I'm your host, Ryan Pluckelman, and this is The Adventure Jogger. Welcome to The Adventure Jogger, everybody. Jeff Stafford is in my kitchen
right now.
Another episode in our series of making sure that 2022 is your best year of running. The heavy hitters have come out for this episode in the series. First off, he is the heart and soul of the ultra community. His laugh can bring you out of the deepest funk. His words of wisdom can inspire you to do stupid things. Andy Jones Wilkins is on the Adventure Jogger. Welcome, Andy.
Hey, Ryan. Thank you for that introduction. It's great to be here, and Happy New Year, guys.
Happy New Year to you as well. And Andy brought a heavy hitter with him. She was number four on the Ultra Runner of the Year for this year. She's also run the fourth fastest time at Western States, among many other things. Brittany Peterson is on the Adventure Jogger. Welcome, Brittany.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So I know, before we get into the meat and potatoes of this episode and why you guys are on, I know a lot of people right now are saying, whoa, Brittany Peterson is on the Adventure Jogger.
What is going on?
Right. You know, you think back a couple months ago, Anton came on the Adventure Jogger. It was the first podcast he did after his comeback. And you're saying, has the Adventure Jogger taken a step up in the podcast world? Are we a legitimate, you know, first or second tier podcast now? Have we moved from the tertiary world to primary or secondary? And the answer is no. And people are wondering, how do you get these guests on? And the real answer is, Andy Jones Wilkins owes me money.
And that's
so
just the bottom line.
He has
right
been
there.
Paying that back slowly but surely by bringing these great guests in. I believe it was Western States this year. I was at a Ralph's doing some last minute shopping for the crew when I heard this voice go, "Oh, I don't know why my credit card's not working." And I'm like, I know this voice. And so I walk to the register. Andy Jones Wilkins is there with a conveyor belt full of beer, and he wants to buy it for his big Western States kegger that he always hosts the night before. Never been invited to this thing. And so as Andy's trying to explain to the cashier that he is a big deal and he will come back and pay, she's not having it. So I step up, I pull out the Discover Platinum card, and I say, "Dubs, I gotcha." And I swiped, and it went through. And Andy's like, "How can I repay you?" Or he said, "How can I repay you, Ryan?" And I didn't ask to be invited to the kegger, but I said, "Someday, Andy, I'll call you. And I'll have to use your influence to get big people on the podcast."
You didn't mention the 15% you charged him on that loan, though.
So that's the real story behind. Just know, Brittany, that, you know, I think he's now down to like $100 that he owes me. And so you're getting him one step closer to never having to speak to me again.
There you go.
So all of that to say, I thought it'd be great to have you guys on because, Brittany, something that I don't know if a lot of people know this about you. You have an incredible ability to kind of balance it all. You've got a pretty busy, active, regular life outside of running, and you're this professional, you know, level one, you know, elite ultra runner. I mean, you run for Nike, for crying out loud. Nike doesn't let anybody on the team. Guess how many times Nike's emailed me asking me to join the team? Zero. And so I thought it'd be kind of fun to talk about how do you do it, Brittany? How do you maintain that healthy balance between training at an elite level, but also, you know, having a job and having a rich social life? So we'll kind of start from there.
Well, I just remember 2019 when I got second at Western States. I was, I think I had just barely met AJW at the race. And then after the race, we ended up kind of chatting a little bit. And I think one of the first things that you said to me was like, don't quit your job, which I feel like, I mean, gosh, you oscillate on that of like, okay, I get this once in a lifetime opportunity. Should I just plunge all the way in? But at the same time, I kind of transitioned into professional running after, 7 years as an occupational therapist working in a hospital.
Yeah.
And, master's degree and just a whole different side of my life where I feel like, I mean, that's valuable. And I've kind of woven my way around, it's complicated to be a full-time, athlete as well as a full-time professional. But I feel like I've found my home this is my fourth year in academics. So I am an occupational therapist by trade, but I now teach in an associate's program. So I teach for an occupational therapy assistant program, which I feel like, so that was like the number one thing that afforded me the ability to find a little bit better homeostasis, because working in a rehab hospital, neurological clients, hard work, heavy burden, high stress, that probably wasn't sustainable or would have been a lot more challenging. And so I feel like I found my way into academics, and now it's like the perfect blend of both worlds of sharing my passion with students while still being able to have a little bit more flexibility for high level training and traveling and racing.
That's very interesting. Andy, you see Brittany finish second at Western States and an incredible performance. And you're like, okay, it's time to dispense some of the dub knowledge here. She's going to get into my world. What was one of the first things you said to her after she has that huge finish? You know she's going to blow up. That was a performance that takes you into the stratosphere. Why was it important for you to say like, hey, don't quit your job?
I'm going to answer that question, but I hope you all realize, and I'm sure you're accustomed to this. You guys know you're tied for the third smartest people on this podcast.
Third smartest.
No, he's smarter than me. He's a helicopter pilot. I'm the idiot on this podcast.
So, it's obviously one of the things Brittany and I clicked on is we're both in academia. I mean, she's in colleges and universities, and I'm in, middle school and high school, but when you have an academic job and one of the nice things about an academic calendar is you do have sort of these natural times off. The main reason I said that in 2019 is that I've just seen so many people dive a whole hog into professional running and burn out real quick.
Right.
Particularly some that come from teaching or another profession, a service profession. So part of my saying that was tongue in cheek, but part of it was also getting a sense of who Brittany was and is, which is a person who functions really well having a lot of balls in the air and needing to juggle a lot of things at the same time and being stimulated in other ways other than just training and racing. And so Brittany's, and she may talk about this, but I'll go ahead. And she's fortunate enough to have, she works in a field that allows flexibility, a field that understands, her window of opportunity as an ultra, a very, very highly competitive ultra runner, but also that has so many gifts to give to her profession outside of running that I think is really important. So that was what motivated that initial conversation. Now I want to go to the actual 2019 race, because part of the reason my friendship, with Brittany was sparked there is, and she would be the first to tell you this, going into that 2019 race, she was under the radar, right? Yeah. She'd run ultras for a while, but had been really competitive in Europe, some really good in the sky running and the highly technical stuff. And I just outed her. I can't remember what podcast it was, or but I outed her, and I Run Far and Trail Runner Nation. And I basically said, watch out, Brittany's going to get top five or something, yeah. something like that. And she noticed that I noticed, really kind of under the radar. But
yeah.
She noticed that I noticed. And then, lo and behold, she goes and gets second. And it's not just any second, right? It's like the most competitive, crucible of ultra running Western States has ever seen. It was unfortunately Courtney DeWalter had an injury around mile 78, 80. She was way ahead. She dropped out. Then all of a sudden it was like game on. And Claire Gallagher and Brittany Peterson had like a race to remember. And it was incredible to see. And so my for both Brittany and Claire, like that's an indelible thing in my head, being the Western States geek that I am. So, that was part of it. And then, all we've been through in the last 2 years has just kind of cemented the fact that it's a really good thing you didn't quit your job.
So, Brittany, let's go back to 2019, leading up to Western States. You're flying under the radar. Your Brittany Peterson Instagram, it's not light. It's not, like small, like the Adventure Joggers Instagram, but you're not blowing it up. And all of a sudden, some guy yaks something on some podcast, and all of a sudden, da-ding, 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 da-ding. When did you realize that you had been outed by the Dubs as this dark horse?
Like, what have you done?
Rolling into Western States. Was it 5,000 Instagram followers in? You're like, what is going on here?
I'm kind of thinking that maybe a lot of people were still on the, we'll see about that, because it didn't happen until I actually showed up and got that second place that probably saw actual changes. But I think for me, like just mentally, I knew what I was capable of, but I hadn't, proven myself at the 100-mile distance, or of course at Western States. That was my first time there. So I feel like, I had spent my time on the course, was really familiar, had a good game plan, knew what to do and how to execute. And so I think hearing that on that podcast, being called out as the dark horse, it was kind of that one external validation outside of my immediate circle of like someone else has noticed this and someone else has confidence, because if you look at like the popularity contest, like I Run Far does the pre-race polling. And I think I was like 23rd because, people didn't know what I could do and I hadn't proven myself in that regard. So I was totally under the radar, which is a good thing, but at the same time can kind of mess with like confidence too, so having that somebody that I recognize from the sport, somebody that has a lot of clout in the sport to recognize that in me was just a huge boost for sure.
Was there any part of you that was like, geez, shit, now I got a target on my back, because you could sneak in under the radar, no one's expecting you, right? And then all of a sudden everyone's going, who is this? Yeah. Like the people are asking that question, but then all of a sudden the spotlight is on you, because let's be honest, if AJ's throwing your name out there, AJW's throwing your name out there, people are taking it seriously. They're not like, oh, that's just the town idiot talking again. It means a lot when your name gets dropped.
Yeah, I think, the cool thing is I had developed relationships with a lot of the other like elite women. Mm-hmm. So I knew that in the like competitor's mindset, I knew that I wasn't necessarily left out.
Yeah.
So I think that helped, just already go in like knowing that I'm there to compete. But it's certainly nice to fly under the radar in like a grand scheme of things where, it just takes some pressure off. But I don't know. Did it really take pressure off? Because I was so in my head anyway, because I'm putting that pressure on myself already.
Yeah.
So I think, I don't know. I think the whole, I didn't feel like I was totally outed, but it was more of the like, oh, someone's paying attention and my name's thrown in the mix. That's kind of cool.
Yeah. I do want to point out, Brittany, that AJW did tell me to not quit my day job at some point, too, but it was an insult when he said it to me.
Right.
It was completely different tone.
You really shouldn't quit your job. Don't.
Like, don't quit your day job, Ryan.
Don't.
Is how he said it. So let's talk about your job for a second. You're an occupational therapist. That's a job that requires you to be very physical, you know, day in and day out. It's not like you're making memes for BuzzFeed where you're sitting on a computer all day, you posting stupid pictures. You're actually doing hard work every single day. Does that kind of help, do you think, having a job that is physical? Does it help you in your training a bit, where someone that has a job that requires a lot of sitting down, a lot of desk work, may not see those benefits?
I'm not exactly sure, because I mean, that's whenever I contemplate, like, oh, should I be full-time athlete or whatever, you know, I go back to, I got to where I am working a strenuous hospital job.
Yeah.
You know, that was hard. So I feel like, I mean, it just goes to show, like, I'm capable of doing a strenuous job, but I also think you have to look at where is your energy being, you know, put, where, right. You know, am I wasting energy or am I compromising myself? And that's where I do feel like the segue into academics has ultimately been better, because, I mean, I still do transfers. I still am doing physical things, but it's certainly not the same as, you know, doing transfers over and over with people that are twice my size and they have significant limitations. So I do feel like, I mean, sure, there's pros of physical jobs, but there's also, if you're doing too much, you're at risk for injury, or, you know, am I putting energy and strength into something that maybe isn't as productive for running? So I do feel like there's that balance where I'm now, like now that I am working, you know, quote, a desk job,
yeah.
It's a better blend of, I can move about, I can stand, I can sit, I'm in the classroom where I'm moving around. So I am still physical, but it's not over the top in the sense of, you know, I'm putting myself at risk for straining my back because I have a heavy load of patients today in the hospital setting.
Gotcha. Andy, your star really took off in the ultra running world when I think there was only really one person in ultra running at the time that was doing it professionally. That was the only thing they were doing. That was like Dean. I think Dean was the first like person that's all they did was ultra running. So you had to maintain a job. You had to, you know, you were a dad raising kids. You were working that job. You were doing other things. You had this full life. When did you see that as a benefit that you had, that some of these stars, as the sport became bigger, as more people were able to take some offers and say, okay, this is going to be my entire life. When did you see it being like, whoa, I don't think this is not the best thing for longevity in this sport?
Yeah, excellent. For me, well, first of all, you know, I did have some nice sponsorships in, you know, between say 2003 yeah. and 2015. But they were generous in the kind of the old school way,
yeah.
Some of which I still have, by the way. And in fact, Brittany and I were talking earlier this week because my most generous sponsor, Patagonia, has pretty much outfitted my entire family for the last 20 years.
Wow.
You know, and that's not a bad thing. Right. But, you know, I felt like for me, you know, as I was in my competitive years, and it was a different competitive environment until about 2011, 2012, that working the balance of having the job, you know, the 40, 50 hour a week as a school administrator with summers off, with, you know, things like spring break and so forth, you know, I was able to, at least in my kind of annual lead up to Western States, kind of do the same thing every year. And I didn't really feel the need to do much more.
Right.
And so what I think was so valuable in my experience, and what I see mirrored in Brittany's experience, is that you have a life to live. You yeah. have maybe a family to bring up, or people to support, or aging parents who are eventually going to need you. You know, while we love in the sport of ultra running living in the moment, I think the most enlightened of us realize there's a bigger picture. And one of the things that, you know, really inspired me about Brittany when she ran Western States in 2019, and then as I've gotten to know her since then, is this understanding of the big picture. I mean, running Western States successfully, and Ryan, you now have been there, you've seen it. It's a lot more than just a physical endeavor. It's a cognitive endeavor. It's an emotional endeavor. It's a psychological endeavor. And you have to have the goods in that regard. And sometimes if you have the goods in that regard, you can make up for possibly being a little bit less naturally talented in the sort of straight up physical. And I saw that in Brittany, in 2019, those intangibles. And so that's part of, and it was a little bit of a mirror of me, you know, when I got my second place, and I think Brittany's going to go higher than second place, yeah. But we can talk about that later. That was as high as I ever got. Yeah. You know, I was still working full time. I was living in the Bay Area. I had little kids. I was driving back and forth to train on the course and so forth. But I knew that I needed all that in my life to make me a good runner. And I think that's important for people. You're talking about the theme of the podcast. What can you do to make 2022 your best year? Know what you know about yourself. Control the controllables. You know, I could control. Look, I'm still going to work. And then I'm going to take off on the weekends and I'm going to train for 14 hours. And it's going to all be good. And I'm going to come back and I'm going to work again another week. So I think you really have to be introspective and ask yourself those questions before you make these kind of big decisions.
Everybody right now wants to be adopted by Andy Jones Wilkins, knowing that his family is outfitted in Patagonia.
Right. Like, never mind the rest of it.
So Brittany, what does a week look like for you when you're, you know, Andy's not doing this? Like, oh, just take it. You know what? It's Christmas. Take some time off. You're getting the, this is the big push. Western States is coming up. You're starting to get into that serious hardcore training. These big weeks you're putting in this time to get yourself race ready, but also balancing that everything else you have to do. What does a week like that look for Brittany Peterson?
So I want to touch on first, because I do feel like there's an element of, you know, my job, or for any of us, like our job saves us from ourselves. You know, like it's January. I could be putting in tons of miles and never get to the start line at Western States because I've destroyed myself too early. So I do think, especially like academics, it's perfect because when I want to really be ramped up, it's in the summer. Mm-hmm. You know, so right now I feel like having other priorities, I mean, it's hard to keep this mindset, but it really does save me from myself as long as I can stay focused on my goals, which, you know, like quality over quantity. That's mm-hmm. how I've always trained. I'm not pushing huge volume weeks all year round. Maybe there's sometimes in the summer when I have more flexibility, more time, I can push higher volume. But this time of year, I mean, it's quality. So I'm not spending hours and hours training. I mean, I certainly maximize. And that's, I mean, what AJW said about like having multiple obligations keeps me more focused, which I've always been that way. When I was in season in college, I got straight A's. And when I was out of season, I procrastinated and I, you know, my grades dropped a little bit, or, you know, I struggled with motivation. So I do feel like it's easy to get lost in that comparison, but ultimately, whenever I go back into reflecting, it's like I do better by having structure. And so right now, I'm super, super fortunate that my direct supervisor, you know, we are like, you know, best friends, essentially. So we get along super well. And then her supervisor above her, he's a physical therapist, and he loves academia because he has summers off and he would do mountain rescue and ranger work in the Tetons. you know, so he's a super active, like pretty credentialed guy himself. So we just chit chat about outdoor athletics and mm-hmm. what, and he grew up in the Sacramento area. So he understands Western states.
Yeah.
So I feel like I'm super lucky that the people that are around me and that are my, you know, superiors are really, really supportive. So, I mean, they even said, you know, we're having a beer one time, like the three of us, and my boss's boss told me the only person holding you back is you, because what I care about is that you're getting your work done and that your students are happy. You know, beyond that, I don't care what you do. You know, so they had said, because obviously I'd talked to them about part-time or should I, you know, I could take this leap into full-time running, you know, and both of them obviously don't want me to leave.
Yeah.
You know, so they've said, like, what can we do to make this work for you? Which I'm very, very grateful for. But I mean, so some days, the days that I don't teach, you know, I can maybe take off a little bit early, get a longer workout in and catch up on emails. Half of my job is like virtual, like, talking to different clinics in the community, coordinating clinical rotations in the community. So a lot of it is, you know, at a computer. So I can catch up on that at any time or on the weekends or whatever. So it affords me more flexibility on certain days of the week. And then the days that I teach, you know, it's either I'm totally not a morning person, as AJW is figuring out. So it is not uncommon. I kind of thrive at like 4, 5, 6 p.m. workouts. So that's kind of just what I've adapted to anyway, where it's busy, but I can get it all in.
So does that give you an opportunity to having that job? You've got students to teach, you've got, you know, coworkers. Does that help then? Because I've talked to people that have made the switch to big time sponsorships, professional running, and sometimes there is, and I'm not, I don't want to call anybody out. I don't want to say any companies worse than any others, but sometimes there's this pressure to race. Do you think that having that job, having those responsibilities is almost a safety net against something like that, where you can say to Phil Knight, like, listen, swoopy guy, I got papers I got to grade. I can't do this. Does that protect you in a way?
It's like, no.
I think it's more so like I'm really lucky that, you know, Nike is pretty supportive and flexible where they're not putting a lot on me. But again, it's saving me from myself of maybe I want to, or I could imagine like if I was financially dependent on, you know, running for an income or performing for an income, I mean, that ups the ante a ton, where that could be positive, but it can tip over into being really, really negative if it's like, well, I can't afford to have quality nutrition because I'm, you know, paycheck to paycheck and now I'm pushing myself too far. You know, it's just, I think it just lends itself to a lot more pressure that I'm grateful that I don't have to deal with. But I've always also kept the balance of like, I get this opportunity. I'm really, really lucky to have this opportunity where I don't want my job to hinder me from things that maybe a professional runner could do. So like Nike just last month, you know, we did a promotion for the Peg Trail at a Dick's Sporting Goods. So they flew me out to Tennessee, you know, where I haven't done a ton of like promotional things like that, where I was happy that, you know, my job could allow me to kind of celebrate that other side of like, be a professional runner, go do these other things. So I think it's cool because the ball is kind of in my court of, I can use my job as kind of saving me from myself or things that maybe are not healthy, but then I can also flex the other way and like enjoy the perks of being a professional athlete.
Where in Tennessee did you end up doing your little run at?
In Knoxville.
Oh, wow. That's a cool part of the state too.
Yeah. I wish I could have been there. It was kind of crazy timing where literally the weekend of that promotion was when all of those horrible tornadoes went through that area. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Real quick, I got to get a silly question in every once in a while to break up the seriousness. There are people, Brittany, there are people that are learning something here. They're going, I am inspired by what AJW and Brittany Peterson are saying. I'm going to incorporate some of this into my day to day.
And now we're going to left field.
if there was, let's just say it's Western States. It's the day before. You know, Team Nike is walking to the pre-race meeting. you know, all together in your fancy Nike kit. Who is the team that you see that you would start a West Side Story style dance rumble with? Who would be the other team that you're like, oh, I can't believe those guys,
those people
showed up? Who is your who is your dance fight rivals the day before Western
States?
Is it
Dan Hoka?
Is it Team Hoka? Right? Are you snapping your fingers going, Hoka, Hoka? And they're going, Nike, Nike. And then you do like, who is it? Spill the beans, Brittany.
You know, I don't really know. I mean, I feel like if you think of just businesses like Nike and Adidas, don't they seem like kind of competitors? But I don't know.
Okay, so we're just going to go with Adidas. That when Nike sees Adidas, that's how.
Or, I don't know. I mean, that's just my like
North Face.
When you see the opinion,
but when you see the North Face guys, like, oh, North Face.
I don't. You know, I just feel like there's so many people that are just so amazing that I can't say that there's anyone there's like, oh man, they're here. I can't believe that.
Well, I'm glad you answered it that way. I mean, from a podcast standpoint, if you would have said like, those fuckers at Team So and So, that would have been the soundbite that would have would have made the podcast explode. But people would have been like, "Oh my god, that would have been all that the people are talking about, front page news." So I'm glad I'm glad that you were able to make sure everyone still loves you.
Like I told you guys, you're the third smartest on the podcast.
Maybe I should change my answer to Patagonia just for AC.
Oh, there you go.
I could edit that.
Nobody would believe you.
No conflict there.
Then they'd really think you're a liar.
So, all right, back to seriousness. Andy, as a coach, you know, you have to take into account Brittany's life. And how does that conversation go? Like, how do you figure out a training plan for an athlete at Brittany's level, taking into account all of these things and making sure that there isn't burnout, and how there's a lot of factors in here. She even just admitted she's not a morning person. You got to figure that in as well.
I know that threw me for a complete loop. You know, I'm sitting there waiting for her workouts to come in, and I'm on Eastern.
Oh, she blew me off today. She blew me off.
I'll just look at it in the morning. I think it's important to, at this point, to acknowledge, you know, I inherited, Brittany had another coach, Paul Lind, mm-hmm. wonderful guy, part of the Lind family. You know, his father, Bob Lind, was the legendary Western States doctor that the family still shoots off the gun every year at Western States at the starting line. Brittany's partner, Cody, is Bob's grandson, Paul's son. So
you can't get coached by your boyfriend's grandpa. She can't get coached by her boyfriend's grandpa.
That's even harder.
Oh,
she was coached from her boyfriend's father.
Oh, that's even that, you can't do that.
Maybe that's a story for another time. Nonetheless, Paul is a great guy.
Yeah.
He and I are friends. I've known him a lot longer than I've known Brittany. But I think it's important, you know, for anybody listening to the podcast that sometimes athletes change coaches, and in this case, you know, Brittany was ready to change coaches this year, and so we ended up being kind of finding a relationship, a coach athlete relationship. You know, one of the things that I love about coaching Brittany, and I love about coaching most of my athletes, is I don't pretend to know to have all the answers.
Right.
So just take, I mean, it's really great that we're having this conversation right now, because just take the last couple of weeks and the next couple of weeks, just to be clear, you know, because you asked the question about what does a typical week for Brittany Peterson look like. I think the first answer is there really isn't a typical week for mm-hmm. Brittany Peterson.
Yeah.
And I would say that's a good thing, but that in the coach-athlete relationship, there's a lot of give and take. You know, Brittany didn't just fall off the turnip truck. You know, she's smart. She knows training pedagogy. She knows exercise science. She knows Western States. Mm-hmm. I mean, she could be coaching herself at this point. And so what I really think is great about this coach-athlete relationship, and could be great for hundreds and hundreds of coach-athlete relationships out there, is the give and take, you know, asking questions about a certain kind of workout, diving into the meaning behind it. What's our long range goal? What's our medium range goal? What's our short range goal? Everything from that to, I mean, Brittany and I are still talking about, you know, what her spring tune-up race schedule will look like going into Western States. So those are the kind of conversations that I think are really important. And frankly, as two people in academics, you know, Brittany and I are both sort of used to teaching younger people or teaching people who want to learn. But even learning is a give and take process. And so I think that's the biggest what's exciting about this relationship, and also, you know, what makes it always a challenge is you're not going to have all the answers. Neither is going to have all the answers. And from time to time, we're going to, you know, maybe have a back and forth. But I think in terms of the inheriting from Paul, right, you know, Paul has had multiple years history with Brittany, and I have access to all that. I mean, heck, if Brittany goes psycho on me, I'm just going to call him up, you know, and be like, hey, so, you know.
She's lost it. She's gone off the deep end.
Oh, yeah, she did that 2 years ago. Here's what you got to do. So
I know Paul would love to offer a support group for you.
The coaches of Brittany Peterson support group. I coached Brittany Peterson, and all I got was headaches and this lousy t-shirt.
Right.
You could wear that one. Brittany, is there something that you're switching coaches, going from your partner's dad, which is an interesting dynamic, to Andy Jones Wilkins, is there something that maybe was an aha moment for you, that having someone else look at your training that was maybe a little farther on the outside pointed something out where you're like, that makes sense, and kind of was a training aha moment for you?
Yeah, I think, you know, like Paul and I, obviously we have a great relationship. It is complicated. It is just by nature going to be complicated. And I think that's kind of where we had decided, you know, it just wasn't optimal for either of us anymore. Not that it was negative, like fantastic, but there's just complications of, is this family member Paul or is this coach Paul?
And no, I can see that. Yeah.
Right. It's messy. When you're going out for dinner, he's like, oh, how was that tempo run today?
Exactly. Yeah, right. I mean, and then ultimately that's not fair to Cody. And then that's not fair to Cody and myself.
Right.
You know, exactly. So I think it was something that needed to happen, and both of us are on the same page with it.
Yeah.
And actually I was talking to Paul about it over the holidays, and, you know, like, I know, I mean, obviously I'm just drawn to AJW because of who he is in the sport and his old school mentality and just, you know, diehard passion for the sport, where that's who Paul is as well. Like, they're bred from the same, you know, same whatever.
Old school cloth. Yeah.
You know, yes. There you go. So
a cloth is a non-wicking fabric.
Yes. There we go. So really, like, Paul was ecstatic when I announced who my coach was going to be, where it's like, he had said, if anyone is going to take over, cause, you know, obviously he still wants me to see me succeed, where he's like, if anyone's going to take over and do a good job with you, I know it's going to be AJW. So it's cool to have that, you know, that support. But it just, you know, like, I was talking to AJW kind of when I was in this limbo and, you know, and struggling with, like, change is hard. Change is, you know, that's a big change in an athlete's life, where just I kind of stumbled across it with AJW, where he's like, I'll coach you. and it's just like, that was almost like a little, you know, answer to a lot of stress and just some clarity of, like, direction moving forward. So, you know, like, bumps in the road as far as just transitions and change. But I feel like there's been a lot of things that have occurred over the last few months that indicate, like, this is a great transition. And I mean, and I even talked to, like, a sports psychologist at one point, where it's like, you can have coaches in different phases of coaches have different strengths for maybe different periods of your career. You know, so I feel like I'm definitely at that excited phase of, I learned a lot and I'm super appreciative of the time I had with Paul, and I'm excited about continuing to learn, you know, with AJW. So,
but was there something that maybe he approached a little differently that for you, you were like, oh, I've never looked at it this way before?
You know, and I think the thing that really intrigued me, it's like, okay, I know what I've done for training, but I think AJW had said to me, I'm really interested in what goes on in between your ears. You know, what gets you to tick?
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, okay, well, you know, getting second to Claire in 2019, what was that? You know, like, was it really fitness? I mean, it could have been, sure, but like, it was probably grit and determination. And she was able to get to that next insane level that I aspire to do. And that's probably between your ears. So I think for me, you know, at this phase of my career, you know, yeah, there's different things that maybe we can fine tune fitness a little differently or a little bit more efficiently or whatever. But I think the biggest thing is, how can you keep strengthening your mental game, your confidence, you know, all of those other things that, one, keep it fun, two, prevent burnout, and then three, bring performance.
By the way, I want to go back just for a second. You're talking about, you know, making that switch in coaches. And, you know, it's not, it's just different coaches for different times, and it worked out. All I could think of, though, Brittany, was, you know how people nowadays, they have those gender reveal parties when they're having a baby?
Yep.
And they'll, like, blow up a building, and, like, pink smoke will come out, and everyone will go,
a blue or a pink moment.
Like, yeah. I think somebody burnt a forest to the ground because they were trying to do something stupid. All I can imagine is there was a party, and there was a box somewhere, and you were like, okay, we're going to open the box and find out
who
Brittany's coach is. And you open the box up. It's a coach reveal party. This just happens all the time in the professional running world. This is something where we're peeking inside the pulling back the curtain in the professional running world. And you open this box, and a balloon with a cartoon face of Andy Jones-Wilkins pops out. And it was like, oh, it's AJW!
Or it's, oh my God, it's AJW.
My money was on Sage Candidate.
Right.
You know, or something like that. This morning.
And then the balloon pops.
Right.
Or Andy pops out of a cake.
Oh, I just had a bad visual.
Yeah, exactly. Let's all go with that. Brittany, if you were to give someone listening to this right now some advice, someone who's thinking, you know, I want this to be my best year of running, but I also want it to be my most balanced year of running, what piece of advice would you give that person?
I mean, I think I have loved that so many more people are talking about this. And I think the big thing is, really, do not get stuck in comparison. So that's probably the number one way to ruin balance.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'll bounce things off of Cody all the time. And actually, that was something when Paul and I started working together in the very beginning. He's like, don't compare yourself to Cody. Like, Cody's another elite athlete, and we live in the same house where it's like, oh my gosh, he's doing two-a-days, or his mileage is this, or he's doing all of this stuff. Like, that is the number one thing to destroy, I guess, just the happiness and the joy, and then to take away all form of balance. You know, and obviously in your same roof is one thing, but then there's, you know, social media and Strava and all. Like, I find myself right now where, you know, some of my training partners are collegiate athletes, and I'm like, oh my gosh, they're running, you know, all of their easy runs at this super crazy fast pace where maybe I should. And then all of a sudden, you know, I ruined a speed workout day because the day before I ran too hard. You know, so I feel like balance in training, but then balance in happiness, and balance in, you know, like, running should be fun. Training should be fun. Racing should be fun. And I know that my little teeter-totter is pretty sensitive to tipping over into things turn less fun. And then, why am I doing that?
Right. Same question to you, Andy Jones-Wilkins. Someone's listening to this right now. They want to make this the best year of running ever. What is a piece of advice that you would give that person to have a great year of running, but have a great balanced year of running?
I would say to balance what you want to do in your body, in your physical body, with what's in your heart and in your head. You know, so in your head, you might think, I want to do this race, or I want to run this event this fast, or I want to get my PR in something. And that's in your head. But ultimately, in your heart, it's like, what am I emotionally connected to?
Mm-hmm.
What is it about running, whether it's signing up for the local 50K or trying to get a qualifier for Western States or any number of other things? What is it that is really drawing me deeply emotionally to this thing? You know, part of why I really like where Brittany and I are is, you know, there's no doubt that she, with the Lind family legacy, has an absolute, you know, connection and passion to Western States. And Ryan, you were there this past mm-hmm. year. You now get it, right? I mean, there's something about that. And I mean, Brittany has a little bit of unfinished business there. I think she doesn't need to do another thing there in her life. She's got a second and fourth place, and
yeah,
you know, she's done what she's going to do. But you know, there's still that, you know, and then there's other things that are out there that might have an emotional pull. And I think we need to, as a running community, continue to pay attention to what is it that motivates us to get out the door every day. Because it's, yeah, sometimes it's losing weight or making sure we don't have heart disease or all these other things that makes us exercise. But typically, if you move beyond that, there's something deeper, right? And I would say for anybody listening to this, to make your 2022 a happy, successful year, find something that's emotionally connected and inspiring to you and go after it. And in the going after it, you'll probably find some fulfillment that you might not have otherwise found.
That's good stuff. Did you take notes, Jeff?
I did.
Good, because you're going to come back to this a little bit later on.
Oh, dear.
Before we go, Brittany, I want to give you a chance here. First of all, thank you. I think with Andy Jones Wilkins, the sky's the limit. It'll be great to see what you do this year. And I'm sure that when the Ultra Runner of the Year comes out next year, you're going to be on that list. And I have a feeling you're going to be a little higher on that list as you continue to see success. But everybody kind of has, you know, for those of us in the middle and the back of the pack, we all have this idea of what the elites do day in and day out. First of all, you run 250 miles a week.
At least.
Your slowest pace is 6 minutes. You know, your speed work is at 4 minutes.
You only eat tofu and spinach.
Tofu, avocado toast,
spinach,
and kale.
Yeah.
What is the most non-elite thing about Brittany Peterson?
This is so good.
Yeah. Okay, so we just had Christmas break where we were like, let's go down to Arizona and train and, you know, like go adventure and all that stuff. And like, Cody and I just really couldn't motivate to organize plans, and the weather wasn't looking super great. So we weren't really just motivated to go anywhere. And I painted my master bedroom and I love it. You know, I like painted, I mean, it's ultra painting. So I painted for like 6+ hours for two days in a row.
I did that last summer.
Did you?
Yeah. But I mean, it's like, I love doing normal things like that. And my room looks really nice now.
Did Cody do the ultra taping? Was he in charge of that?
You know, he's like, you kind of get a little bit perfectionistic with some house projects like that. So I'm going to let you to it.
Do you tape or do you cut?
I taped for layer one and then I removed the tape and I did very intricate lines without any taping for layer two.
What you don't know, though, is as Brittany was painting, she did have her watch on so she could upload that to Strava.
Right?
Yeah, exactly. It definitely went on training peaks, I'm sure.
Right.
Right. I'm sitting there like, what is this 4-hour workout? With like a 56 heart rate.
It's pretty low heart rate.
I have to say, too, like last summer, was it last? Yeah, like 2020 summer, Cody and I did that 300-mile Superior hiking trail in Minnesota.
Yeah, yeah.
And we got back home to Idaho and we dug out our driveway and we made it where two cars could park in our driving spot. I mean, so it's like house projects. It's active recovery.
All right. I can't.
And her next project's going to be plumbing.
Exactly.
Yeah. I'm eyeing that backsplash in my kitchen, but that takes a little more skill than painting.
All right. Brittany, if I don't ask this question, people will leave bad reviews on Apple Podcasts. What color did you paint the bedroom?
So Cody would say it's too feminine, but it's blue. I mean, it's like a gray blue, but then the closet doors are a lighter blue, so there's some nice contrast.
Oh, like that's so, almost sounds like what you painted. House, yeah. Yeah. Are you probably the same color?
Silverish blue color. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh,
see?
Cody Lind called your house feminine.
See, no, that's not too feminine, but there are like, you know, girly wall decorations and it really ties in all of the colors.
It's the new beige.
Yeah.
That's what they say. It is the new beige.
Right.
Brittany Peterson, again, thank you so much for joining us. This has been a great conversation that I don't think has had enough in the running world about maintaining that balance, having that life outside, and being okay with being like, I don't want to run. Let's just go paint let's paint that master.
Let's have some donuts.
That master bedroom. Andy Jones-Wilkins, it is always a pleasure. I'm sure by the end of this year, you won't owe me any more money, and you'll never have to hear from me again.
Oh, Ryan, come on. I probably will still have, you know, a couple quarters I'm going to have to throw your way.
Right.
Thank you so much for everyone listening to this series of podcasts from The Adventure Jogger. We really appreciate your listening to it and downloading
it. Nice.
And letting us come along with you on some miles. TheAdventureJogger.com is the place to go if you want back episodes and you want to look at gear. We even got Adventure Jogger jogging pants worth checking out. We are 100% listener supported. You can make a monthly pledge on our Patreon page. Just search The Adventure Jogger on Patreon or go to theadventurejogger.com. Join the community on Facebook and Instagram by searching The Adventure Jogger. And subscribe to The Adventure Jogger wherever you get your podcasts so you don't miss a single episode.